Welcome to America's Jobs Team. At Consultant Connect, we believe the greatest force for change is a job, but it requires amazing, talented economic developers. Each week, we will go deep with America's jobs heroes on their leadership journeys, with the belief that when leaders get stronger, their communities thrive.
Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast, powered by Consultant Connect and sponsored by our friends at Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. Today, Leonard Sledge, Director of Economic Development at the City of Richmond of Virginia, joins us today. He has over 15 years of experience in workforce and economic development, and he focuses on attraction and retention of existing companies and promoting growth of small businesses. He has some really interesting insights on equity, inclusion, and economic development, so let's listen in to his interview. Well, Leonard, I want to get started. We're really excited to have you here on the America's Jobs Team podcast. One of our favorite parts of the podcast is getting to hear some of the stories from our guests on how they got into economic development. So, you know, would you mind just sharing, you know, briefly, you know, your background and how you chose economic development?
Sure. You know, like a lot of folks in our profession, I never heard the words economic development as it related to a career opportunity. I actually went to school, studied to become an industrial engineer, worked in the advanced manufacturing sector, specifically semiconductor manufacturing for some of the world's greatest computer chip companies. Worked outside of semiconductor manufacturing for a year for a food processing company to get a greater sense of manufacturing. And what I learned in those two experiences is manufacturing is manufacturing. Same skill sets that people require, just the difference of processes that yield a product. And it wasn't until my wife and I started our family that I looked for opportunities outside of the manufacturing sector. You know, in the mid-2000s, late-2000s, that industry was very cyclical. But I was very fortunate to come across an opportunity with the local community college system in Phoenix, Arizona, where there was a National Science Foundation Center looking for someone who understood advanced manufacturing from a technician preparation and skill set standpoint. And it was when I started working with the community college system that I learned about workforce development and really became intrigued with the opportunity of helping people get prepared for career opportunities. And it was there that I worked. I worked hand in hand with the Regional Economic Development Organization in Phoenix. And that's where I first heard the words economic development. And the light bulb went off. And that's when I set my sights on a career in economic development, all geared towards helping to create opportunities for people to improve their quality of life economically.
Well, it's so interesting now because workforce development is that elephant in the room. Everywhere you go, that's what people are talking about. It's not always just the job creation. So your background, I'm sure, you know, helps you really succeed in your role now, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been fortunate that I've lived it and breathed it in the private sector and an industry that was looking to hire thousands of people to staff several new state-of-the-art manufacturing facilities. And understanding and seeing firsthand that a person didn't have to have a four-year college degree to live a really good life, you know, again, from an economic standpoint. Just being able to parlay those experiences, again, just working with colleges and employers, and then even at the four-year university level from an economic development standpoint. And so I've been really fortunate in my career that I've been able to translate the skill sets that I've been able to develop and cultivate, you know, through the lens of private sector manufacturing to public higher education to local government, again, all to help meet the needs of community.
So what are some of the challenges that you're facing in your own leadership and what sort of things are you doing to overcome them? You know, if you're not facing challenges, you're maybe not pushing the boundaries of leadership well enough. So what are some things that you're facing and what are you doing to try to, you know, get over those challenges?
Yeah. So in recent years, and probably no different than any other set of recent years, there has been a very large emphasis on equity and inclusion as it relates to economic development. And it is, you know, as localities continue to grow and redefine themselves, we just have to really focus and concentrate on doing so in a way so that everyone moves forward, and being very purposeful in that. And in terms of my leadership and the impact, it's just really, again, forcing me to go into my toolbox of all of the experiences that I've had through the years professionally, and just really leaving no stone unturned, try to help make sure that people from all walks of life, regardless of socioeconomic status, regardless of skin color, regardless of education level, regardless of whatever their station is in life, that we help to create opportunities for them.
That's interesting. So talk to me a little bit about what's your strongest quality, I suppose, in leadership, and how do you use that to be a better leader?
You know, it's interesting. Over the, the past several months, it's dawned on me that I really do work well with others. And I think that's important regardless of the type of work per se that we do. And in terms of my leadership, it just means that for me, it's just a constant commitment and awareness of making sure that I'm listening to people, that I'm engaging everyone as best that I can to clearly understand what they're saying, the intent of what they're saying, and doing everything that I can to address issues, challenges, but also issues and challenges, but also to challenge and to question, so that at the end of the day, the work that we're collectively endeavoring to do, it's the absolute best work for the citizens of the community that I represent, in this case, the city of Richmond.
So Leonard, you spend a lot of time, helping to develop leaders and, pouring into people, whether it be in workforce development or within your organization or community. What kinds of things are you doing to ensure that you're renewing yourself and you're pouring into your own leadership?
I'm the type of person where I am an observational learner. And so just sitting back and watching and listening to individuals who I believe, have succeeded, and by success, not necessarily, the pinnacle or peak in their company or in their profession or chosen field, but people, individuals who have been able to move from point A to point B, and to do so in a level that they're pleased with and that they're happy with. Yes, there are conferences, different professional organizations, but also, again, just taking time and gleaning from the successes of others. And that, whether it be through a formal conversation, informal conversation, but again, just sitting back and watching, you can learn so much about.
Leonard, I'm curious, and I'll tell a quick story. I'll never forget when I met you at one of our events and I told you that my wife and I were, expecting our third child. And you said, Nick, I got to give you a piece of advice. Go for the minivan. You said, get the minivan. It'll make your life easier. So I appreciate that advice very much. We haven't done it yet, but I'm sure we will in soon. I'm curious, though, what's a piece of advice, if you could go back, 10 years or so, what's a piece of advice you'd give yourself, knowing what you know now, other than get a minivan?
That's a great question. I would say the one piece of advice I would give myself is make more time for yourself. And it's critically important. I fundamentally love the work that I do. The work of community, the work of people, the work of helping a community and the people who make it up achieve its goals and visions, it can be challenging work. And I'm the type of person where every opportunity that I've had, I've done my absolute best to dive in head first and learn and at the same time contribute. But I think if anything, make more time for yourself.
Yeah, something that we tend not to be selfish, and sometimes it's just something that you have to do in order to be a better leader. So that's really great advice. So, as we record this podcast, we're just a couple of days removed from the tragedy of Kobe Bryant and the eight others that, lost their lives in the helicopter crash. And, we're talking a lot about his legacy and what he's remembered by, and you hear about his incredible work ethic and how he was as a father. And it's, I think, made a lot of us think, what do we want to be remembered by? What's something that you want to be remembered by?
Oh, man. The things I know I absolutely want to be remembered by is as a man who loved God, as a man who loves his wife and children, And as a man who was committed to figuring out how to do the right things the right way and for the right reason. When I think about, you know, you mentioned Kobe Bryant, you know, undoubtedly one of the all-time greats to play the game of basketball, but also I think to leverage the platform that he had to just show how you can continue to do good and have an impact. One of the things that amazes me about him, I think that's applicable for all of us, is I don't think that there was ever a shot he didn't think he could make. And just the relentless pursuit of just being better. But as I look at how Kobe Bryant played the game, I also think about, gee, his game looks a lot like Michael Jordan. And his mindset feels a lot like Michael Jordan. And all of that to say, again, just is there are, I think for great people, great leaders, they have always positioned themselves or should always position themselves to be a student, regardless of any levels of success.
I can't imagine a better answer to that question, Leonard. We really appreciate those insights. Well, you know, we want to flip the tables a little bit and lighten things up as we conclude here and do what we call our rapid fire questions. Now, these are just meant to be, you know, one or two words, first thing off the top of your head. So are you ready?
Yep.
All right. Awesome. First car.
1985 Brown Mercury Lynx.
Favorite color?
Blue.
Last book you read?
In the Footsteps of a Prophet.
Tacos or pizza?
Pizza all day.
Nice. Would you prefer the beach or the mountains?
I love the ocean, the beach.
Text or call?
Call.
Digital or print news?
Print. I find out there's so much that you don't see on the digital versions.
Interesting. That's good to know. Favorite band in high school?
Oh, gosh. Favorite band in high school? I'm a hip-hop era kid, so I'd have to say Eric B. and Rakim, Paid in Full, is the greatest album ever made.
Nice. Awesome. Guilty pleasure TV show?
Oh, gosh. Guilty pleasure TV show, I would have to say is, man, I like the quick hits on Netflix.
Oh, nice.
Where I can binge watch, and I just finished one, The Messiah. Or Messiah, rather, on Netflix.
Awesome. We'll have to check that out. Who would play you in a movie?
You know, I had somebody ask me this question. I would say Forrest Whitaker.
Love it. Dog or cat?
Dog. I got a Boston Terrier, Jarvis.
My wife would be jealous. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
If you could be an animal, what would you be?
I would be a lion. My name is Leonard.
I love it. Leonard, it was a pleasure having you on the podcast today. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. We know you're busy, but we really appreciate you sharing your leadership lessons with the audience. Thanks a lot, Leonard. Hey, this year at Consultant Connect, we're really excited about an event that we have coming up called C2 University. It is the inaugural year, but it's kind of a merge of an event that of a couple of different groups, Next and Thrive, which a lot of people have heard of us talk about in the past. We're really excited, though. This is for the, you know, forward thinkers in the industry, those that want to think creatively on how to develop their economic development skills in the new way of economic development. So visit www.c2university.com. So www.c2university.com or email me, Nick@consultantconnect.org. It's going to be on July 28 and 29 right here in our home of Kalamazoo, Michigan, which in that time of year is just an absolute beautiful time to be here. So we hope you can make it. Hey, so a lot of people that have been to Economics, our annual conference, or maybe at one of our other Consultant Connect events have heard our leader, Ron Kitchens, speak on a number of different subjects as far as leadership goes. And several have asked how Ron could come to their community and help them in their leadership. So I brought in Faye, who can help with that.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So Ron loves coming to your communities. Ron loves to share his leadership lessons. And if you have any desire to bring him into your community to have him share his lessons and influence and inspire your community, just reach out to me. You can email me at Faye, that is F-A-Y-E, @consultantsconnect.org. And I'm happy to chat with you a little bit more about what that looks like, what the costs are involved with that, and to pick a great time for him to come visit with you.
Hey, everyone. On today's 60 Seconds with a Site Consultant, we will be hearing from Brian Farlow. If you were in a community, and I know you've spent a lot of time, you know, doing business attraction, that was interested in recruiting more foreign direct investment, do you have any advice for communities on, you know, what they could do in terms of marketing? Do you find that trade shows are more effective, or, you know, hiring out a consulting firm, or do you have any suggestions on how they get started in that business attraction when it comes to doing that internationally?
One thing I would suggest just to start off with, and this is true with domestic too, is just know what you have and know what you can get. I see a lot of communities put a lot of time and energy and resources and money into trying to recruit the big fancy deal when they're just not set up for that type of project. I mean, it's good to diversify, but you need to diversify within reason of what you currently have. So if you're mainly a manufacturing community, the idea of getting a healthcare headquarters or some kind of financial technologies out of Europe is just probably not going to happen, or at least not without extreme expenses. As far as trade shows goes, this is just me talking. I've never been a big fan of trade shows alone, especially at the community level, just because it's hard enough for people from other countries to tell you where a state is, let alone a community. So if you're going to do it, you need to say where you are and not just your community. Because like I said, I mean, most folks can't tell you outside of, you know, Miami, Chicago, New York, L.A., they can't tell you where anything is. So that would be my bit. And if you're going to do a trade show, do your homework and go to the one. And I'm talking 6 months of research. You need to be reaching out to folks. If you're going to take collateral with you, make absolutely certain your translations are correct. I've stepped on that landmine before. Google Translate is not good enough. The best bet would be to find your college, community college, or somebody who speaks that language fluently and ask them for help. But as far as hiring a outside consultant to do it, there are some, it depends on your budget. If you've got a lot of money and you can afford the big dogs, yeah, they're valuable. But there's also some really good small shops out there that are probably more price effective for a community level to talk with. I know a few of those folks, and they're just as good as the big guys, but definitely more affordable. But it's a good idea because, one, you have somebody in country with you that understands manufacturing, recruiting, or just business development in general, so they can speak that language for you, because industrial language and our economic development language is very different from conversational language. In many cases, the word you're trying to use in English has to be defined in the other language because there is no translatable word for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's a great answer. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm here with Steven Jast from Gazelle AI. Steve, what did you learn about data signals that are indicative of corporate expansion?
Great question. Before Gazelle AI, we would prioritize outreach based on historical revenue and employment growth, changes in the C-suite. With Gazelle AI, we discovered that few of those data points were truly meaningful when predicting future growth. In fact, data signals such as pension plan growth, financial ratios, innovation climate, and access to finance proved to be far more robust. We now use all these data points within our company growth scores to help users identify growth companies and attract more investment.
Wow, that seems like a great tool for economic developers. Thanks a lot, Steve. If you would like more information about Gazelle AI, feel free to email Steve at sjast, that's S-J-A-S-T, at gazelle.ai. Well, as always, so great to talk with Leonard, and then also so great to hear some insights on foreign direct investment from Brian Farlow. Tune in again next week for another episode diving deep into the personal leadership journey of another one of our fellow economic development champions.